Crazy, a Psych Central podcast. And here are your hosts, Jackie Zimmerman and Gabe Howard.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Not Crazy. We are here with my co-host, Jackie, who has written no less than 7 books completely in her head. She also lives with depression.
And I'm going to introduce you to my co-host, Gabe, who lives with bipolar and also has written just one book that has been published. But like, what's just one when you could have 7 unpublished?
Jackie, we are doing a first here today. We're going to interview a young woman. She's 23 years old and she lives with bipolar disorder, but she's also newly diagnosed with bipolar. Now, she has asked to remain anonymous, so we are going to call her Emma. Emma, thanks for calling in and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you were diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 2 in 2019. It's safe to say you're a newbie.
Yes, very much so. Figuring out the ropes.
So, Emma, tell us the circumstances around your diagnosis. What was happening before, during, what led to it?
So, initially, I was diagnosed with depression while I was in high school after a car accident. But once I was an adult after college and working in a toxic environment, I knew that something was wrong. And so I got a psych eval done, and from there they were able to diagnose me with bipolar.
When you say something was wrong, what did you feel like was wrong?
It always felt like a sine wave. So there were such high highs and lows that it was like this out-of-body experience where my emotions weren't similar to others. I was always too emotional for people. I was always categorized as dramatic. And I knew that I wasn't over the top or attention seeking, but I knew that their perception was wrong, but I didn't know internally what was wrong.
I find that incredibly interesting. I also have bipolar disorder, and I was described as dramatic. I was described as loud. I was described as over the top. My emotions were never in check, and I was always very, very moody. Mm-hmm. And while I did see that as wrong, I didn't think that it was the kind of wrong that was medical or necessitated any. I just thought I was a bad person. Did you have any feelings like that? Like this was just like a moral failing?
Oh, 1,000,000%. I think especially during the depressive phases, I would self-hate so badly. And I honestly think it was only because of other people still being my friend that I was like, I can't be that bad because I still have people around me wanting to support me.
So let me ask you both a question about the, we'll call it the dramatic, overly emotional responses that everybody else was sort of accusing you of. Mm-hmm. There are times when I react certain ways and I'm like, that was maybe a little over the top. probably not my best work right there. In that moment for you guys, was it one of those things where you were like, I know this is maybe a little over the top for me, but I can't seem to reel it in because that's what happens to me. So I just keep going, right? Is this the same thing?
I think being undiagnosed really led to me gaslighting myself. And so I think it was similar to you, Jackie, in that I would say, oh, that was just me. Lesson learned. Let's fix it next time. But then the same thing happened on a daily basis.
One of the really shitty parts of being bipolar, and I'm going to bet just straight up that Emma's going to agree, we have emotions. We can be dramatic. We can overreact. And all of that is perfectly normal because normal people overreact. They get angry, frustrated, tired, sleepy, bitchy, whatever. Whatever word you want to use, we're not robots. The problem is there's like another gear, right? There's like another level and it happens so often and you just have such little control. So now that I am in treatment and I've been in treatment, you know, 17 years. Whenever that happens, it's like, okay, is it a bad day? Or is Gabe symptomatic? Dun, dun, dun. And it's a pain because not every one of our emotions can be proof of some, I don't know, disease because we want to have emotions. We want to love deeply. And sometimes it's fun to be dramatic. Jackie, as your friend, I like it when you're over the top. But I wouldn't like it if you were over the top 15 times a day and then you jumped off a roof because you could fly. So
good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah. Me either. I also would not like that.
I would probably stop you. I mean, was there steps involved or did you take an elevator? If the roof was at the end of an elevator, I would stop you from jumping. If you walked up like 20 flights of stairs to jump off this thing, I'd be like, I miss Jackie.
I'm on my own. Yeah. I mean, if I walk up 25 stairs, I'm in amazing shape. anyway.
Emma, you're young. You're still within the age range of 16 to 24, which is when the stereotypical diagnosis of bipolar comes down. And you were also diagnosed with depression first, and then they realized that there was this mania component, which gets you into a bipolar diagnosis. And all of that has happened very recently, September. So how are you feeling? I mean, this is a lot to get hit with.
It is. It feels like I got hit by a semi. But then the semi turns into flowers because I'm not insane, right? Like, it's crazy because I now feel validated, which I've never felt in my entire life. Like, I always associated myself with being dramatic and all those things we just discussed, right? So now I feel validated and I'm very much so a type A person. So now I can get steps to treat and feel better. The diagnosis, I think, saved my life for sure.
Did you feel validated in that all those dramatic feelings maybe weren't so dramatic, or were you validated for your doctors? Like, tell me more about feeling validated.
So many studies prove that women aren't listened to in the healthcare industry. And I had other issues that I wasn't listened to for as well. And so finally being heard. And then science proving that my words were true is what caused validation, that I wasn't making it up. You know, I think it gave myself credibility, my words credibility.
What about your family? What were they doing during this time? Were they questioning you? Were they supporting you? And then after you got your diagnosis, how did they feel?
So when I was in high school, they saw firsthand the depressive phase. My mother is who took me to the doctor, who later said I should go to a therapist. But then regarding the bipolar, I have not told my family because they don't support me seeing a therapist. So that's been interesting. I've told one of my brothers, and so he is incredibly supportive and understands and recognizes my need to see a therapist and get medicated. I recently told him this past weekend, but other than that, I think that's a boundary I don't want to cross with my family because they don't understand seeking medical help.
Let's talk about that for a moment. The sort of podcasting journalist in me wants to say, how can you possibly know what they think, what they feel? You haven't gotten both sides of the story. You're not being fair. You're collecting data from one side and drawing conclusions. But the guy who lives with bipolar is like, yeah, that's perfectly reasonable. You're probably right. And I'm really mixed on that, though, because I've been wrong a lot. I thought that my family would not be supportive of me. They found out because I was hospitalized. So there was just no way. You know, Gabe went somewhere for 4 days. We had to explain why Gabe couldn't make phone calls. So I was in a psych hospital. Why are you there? Bipolar, it turns out. So I really didn't have to wrestle with whether or not I wanted to tell my family. Mm-hmm. But I did wrestle with whether or not I wanted to tell friends, my workplace, the general public. So I want to ask very specific questions on the family, your family. Mm-hmm. Do you really believe in your heart of hearts that if you said, listen, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, brother, sister, just whoever your family is, I have bipolar disorder, that they would just be like, well, you're out? Or is it something more or less?
So, great question. So maybe your insight, both of you, would be helpful. So before I was diagnosed, while I was in the toxic workplace, I was therapist, and that was of constant turmoil for my family. And so every time I would visit, that would be an argument regarding, I only go to a therapist because I want to be told that I'm correct and I want someone to tell me that my choices are great. I wanted a fluffer is why I went to a therapist, is their understanding.
That is a great word. I love that example.
Right? And so if you don't understand the validity of therapy, you're not going to understand the validity of therapy diagnosing me with bipolar disorder.
If I can play the other side for a moment, what I keep thinking is stuff that's happened in my own family, where my father is complaining about something and I think, wow, you're just an idiot. That is nonsense. You just don't want to fill in the blank. And that's my line of thinking. You don't want to, therefore X. Mm-hmm. But then another data point comes in and I find out that, oh my God, it's not that he doesn't want to because of X, it's because of Y. And I never considered why, and he's standing in front of me showing me whatever. And that's that new data point. And I, as a reasonable person, look at it and say, oh my God, I have misjudged you. Mm-hmm. In many ways, you're saying, hey, I don't want to give my family this extra data point because emotionally, if they don't accept that data point, that's going to be bad for me. But it could also be good for you. They could accept that data point and they could be like, hey, I was wrong, therefore fixing it. So it is kind of a risk reward, right? And you're still on the, I'm not willing to take the chance right now, if I understand you correctly.
So I had a great professor once tell me if someone needs an explanation on why they should be empathetic towards you, they're not empathetic human beings.
Ooh, mic drop.
And so,
but it's also, but what about misunderstandings?
No, okay. I'm going to interrupt both of you right here and stand in and say, Gabe, wrong. She knows her family. Emma has been living with her family her whole life. She has 23 years of anecdotal proof of how they react to things, specifically medical diagnoses. And I, as a firm believer in one, therapy, and two, big fat boundaries, think that she's doing the right thing to preserve herself right now.
Yeah.
With a new diagnosis and figuring out meds and all the things that go along with this big, huge, maybe life-altering thing, it is perfectly fine to preserve yourself along the way and go, that family thing, maybe I'll deal with that later.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We've got a message from our sponsors.
Interested in learning about psychology and mental health from experts in the field? Give a listen to the Psych Central podcast, hosted by Gabe Howard. Visit psychcentral.com/show or subscribe to the Psych Central podcast on your favorite podcast player. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. Secure, convenient, and affordable online counseling. All counselors are licensed, accredited professionals. Anything you share is confidential. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist whenever you feel it's needed. A month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. Go to BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral and experience 7 days of free therapy to see if online counseling is right for you. BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral.
And we're back talking with Emma, who is a young woman with a brand new bipolar diagnosis.
I tell people all the time, if you're not comfortable sharing, don't, because it's a problem that you don't fucking need. And I want to say that to you, Emma. I am on your side. Don't take the risk. You got way too much to worry about. Mm-hmm. But there's also, like I said, this piece of me that knows that I believed firmly that my father would tell me that I wasn't a man, that I was a wuss, and that he would tell me to sack up and be a man. And then I found out my father was in therapy for 15 years and he hid it from me.
Wow.
So there's this little piece of me that's just like, wow, I wonder what data points her family is keeping from her, because this is going to influence her ability to make decisions. And, you know, families are such a mess. That's the one thing I've learned from doing these podcasts and these shows and writing. Families just lie to each other constantly, just constantly. My dad lied to me for years. My mom, my grandma, they're just all liars. I'm fairly certain that everybody in my family had premarital sex, but then they told me to wait until I was married because we're all Catholic. I don't know. We're all lying to each other. Just nothing but lies.
So I can share some insight. I required surgery when I was 20. For another diagnosis. And so my mother was in the room when I was told I needed surgery. And we left. And she and my father sat down and told me, maybe you shouldn't get the surgery.
But it was life-saving surgery. It was medically necessary surgery.
Right. Oh, but fear trumps.
This is bad for my side.
It is bad for your side. So that's one example. Fear trumps logic to families, I think. And then the other thing, though, is I think it's been really cool because I've been very open about my mental health. And because of that, and they've been able to both share with me that they've been depressed. My brothers and sisters have shared with me that they've been depressed. So that is the one, like, the one gem I have, but that's where the boundary stops.
You and Jackie are 100% right. Boundaries are personal. They're personal to us. In the interest of the podcast and all of the people listening, I really, really am taken by my own story because it's my life, right? And I just think, wow, I never would have found out this stuff about my family if I wouldn't have told them. But of course, I'm a liar even in this story because I didn't tell them. I didn't sit down and weigh out the pros and cons. I was just kind of forced to tell them because, like I said, I was in the hospital. And I agree with you. You have to do you, because if you do get that bad outcome, and you're like, now I've got all of this stuff to deal with and the bad outcome. I'm not an optimistic person, so I have no idea why I'm sitting here saying, be optimistic. And in general, I think our families mess us up more than like anybody else on the planet. So I'm suddenly in the role of the optimistic person that says, trust your family, while I also have like huge abandonment issues and I'm still mad at my mom for something she said when I was 7. So I got nothing. The wheels are off the bus. I'm handing the show over to Jackie.
Good, because I have a lovely question. I would like to know from you, Emma, as somebody who's been newly diagnosed, you've got all these other factors, your family, your job, some past stuff with depression. When you get this diagnosis and you feel validated, the next step is to seek treatment. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you were in therapy. I'm assuming you probably started talking about medication with someone, your doctor, your therapist, somebody in that whole mix, a psychiatrist. What was your experience like trying to get treatment?
So it started with, I was so excited to get help. Right. And whether it ended up being medication or something else, I wanted a solution. And the first thing that happened was I needed to wait a month and a half to meet with someone. So everything got put on hold. And then finally, once I met with someone, I was able to be prescribed medication. That was the treatment plan they chose for me. And now it's been 9 days of being on medication. And I journal every day on how I've been feeling with the medication. I don't think anybody prepares for recognizing what a long journey it is to get treatment.
One of the reasons that we wanted to have you on the show is because you're newly diagnosed and you're newly on meds. You are literally at the beginning of this journey. What made you decide to take medication? Because in the bipolar world, this is a deeply, deeply debated subject about whether or not you should go on medication. Full disclosure, I am on medications for my bipolar disorder. Obviously, you're on medications for your bipolar, but it's fresh in your mind. 9 days ago, when they prescribed the medication and you decided to take them, what were you thinking?
Taking medication is self-care for me. I deserve to have my mood be stable, and I deserve to live a life in which I'm advocating for myself. And for me, that meant I deserve to take medication.
Thank you, Emma. I really appreciate that. I am surprised it is such a debate. I believe, and science supports, people with bipolar disorder just do not do well long-term without getting their mood stabilized. Once your mood is stabilized, then you need, you know, therapy and coping mechanisms and all of the things around you. It's not a magic pill. And I often see that as the debate. Well, if this works so well and it's such a magic pill, why are people on pills and still having a bad life? Well, because it's not fucking magic, you moron. It just helps. It brings in the edges.
Bipolar is incurable, but it can be treated.
I completely agree. In addition to medication, what else are you doing?
I love therapy, and my amazing therapist has given me a toolbox of coping mechanisms. I've been able to step into my authenticity and recognize when I'm triggered, and therefore I pull out things from that toolbox.
I just want to take a minute and note that you said that taking meds and going to therapy was self-care and that you deserve to be happy and healthy. And I'm not going to clap because that would be weird on a podcast, but I'm going to mentally and emotionally clap for you, because what an amazing statement. It feels very self-aware and smart. I couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely believe that that is self-care. So just sort of like golf clap to you on that one, Emma. But reeling it back to therapy, which we just did an episode on, and about how much I love therapy. I love it so much. We could talk for another 20 minutes, but we won't, about why I love therapy. So I'm going to ask you about your therapy. Therapy before your diagnosis and after, has it changed, or are you still kind of tackling the same things the same way?
So before my diagnosis, I was still putting things in the toolbox. And now, in addition to adding to my toolbox, we can identify things that are very bipolar specific and things that are more so living as an adult. And categorizing my emotions has helped my therapist help me better and myself understand what triggers me better.
And you put all that together and you have the best shot at your best life, right? It's
yes.
It's not even just those two. It's not even medication and therapy. You also need hobbies and love and interests and friends and Netflix. I mean, all of these things go together to give us our best chance at getting Netflix to sponsor our show.
Wonderful. Yes.
Well, and to Gabe's point in there, we talking about support and friends, who is your support network right now? Because if you're not telling your family, do you feel supported? Who's helping you right now?
Quite honestly, my brother and best friend, and just the She Hive, a phenomenal group of women who I trust and support as well. They've become a family, and they're the most incredible support system and cheerleaders for me. And so initially when I got diagnosed, it felt like I was lost initially. I didn't feel supported. I sent Gabe a ridiculously long email of me panicking, and that made me even feel supported. But speaking to my therapist and then speaking to the people I love helped me feel supported again.
We hope that a lot of people can listen to this and see some of themselves in you or completely disagree with you. Like, that's the beautiful part of these conversations and of sharing our stories. We don't need people to agree with us. We just need people to understand that we're all different and be willing to talk about it more. I just think we have a lot more in common than we don't. I just like to talk. That's really what it comes down to. We talk about so much ad nauseum, so much minutia in the world we will talk about until our ears bleed. But suddenly our emotions, our feelings, our mental health, mental illness, we're like, shh, don't talk about it. But I'm still hearing about who is better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James. I don't care. It's LeBron James. Emma, thank you so much for being open about your mental illness and your mental health challenges on our show.
You're welcome.
I agree with you, Gabe. Talking to you, Emma, has helped me learn a little bit about the process of being diagnosed with bipolar, because that's something that I'm not familiar with. I feel like we have a lot of listeners who are probably right there with you, sort of in the trenches or in the same timeline, experiencing all the same things that you are. So being able and willing to share your story, I think, is incredibly valuable. And I don't love this term, but I think it was brave. I think it was brave of you to come here and share what your life has been like.
Thank you both so much for giving me a platform to do so.
Jackie, did you have fun?
This was a good one. I look forward to more guests.
Yeah, this is our first guest. Can you believe it?
First guest bucket checked.
And to our listeners, tell us how we did. Hit us up at show@psychcentral.com. Tell us what subjects you would like to hear about or what guests you would like to see. Or say, hey, Gabe and Jackie are so incredible. There should never, ever, 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 ever be guests ever again. Oh, yeah. And share us on social media. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Not Crazy from Psych Central. For free mental health resources and online support groups, visit psychcentral.com. Not Crazy's official website is psychcentral.com/notcrazy. To work with Gabe, go to gabehoward.com. To work with Jackie, go to jackiezimmerman.co. Not Crazy travels well. Have Gabe and Jackie record an episode live at your next event. Email show@psychcentral.com for details.
And share us on social media. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
You want to yell bye again?
Yeah, I forgot. I always forget the fucking bye. Okay. All right.
You can yell things other than bye, like later, chills.
Who says that?
I don't know. I don't know what millennials say. I'm off to make the bread, bitches. Later, beats. I don't know. What are the fucking goodbye words?
Like, they're all singular. Bye. See ya.
Late.
Late.
Adios.
What are you, 15? Late. I'm just making up new words now. Yeet. Like, what?
What is yeet?
Exactly.
Just say goodbye. Just be like an old late. Goodbye. Put on a coat.
Right. See you later. I hate this.
You sounded so angry there. Like, fucking see you later. That's what you sounded like. See you later.
I know.
See you later, you bitch. Funny. Okay, just say bye.
Bye.
All right, we're using that one.